We have a somewhat abbreviated agenda tonight, so we'll have some ample time for discussion if anybody has anything in particular. The minutes of the May 9th, 2013 meeting have been provided, and if you would, please take a minute or two to look those over, and we'll entertain motions for their approval or amendments. Okay, we have a motion from Mr. Clay, and second from Ms. Kessler to approve the minutes of the May 9, 2013 meeting as submitted. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please indicate approval by saying aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We'll move on to the staff reports. A summary sheet is in your packets as attachment 3C. Several items covered under the subject of AMATS federal funds report, and Curtis will go ahead and elaborate on those for us.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that we learned, and we had a good feeling for it, and if you have in your packet the big spreadsheet that has all of the projects listed, I don't know if you have that, but basically, over last year, AMATS and its members spent $27.5 million on infrastructure improvements. This is by far the most projects that we've financially, like money-wise, have ever been able to put on the street. It's also the greatest number of projects in one year we've ever put on the street. We spent over 170% of our original allocation, so we almost put out twice as much money as we were allocated this year. It's a lot of hard work from ODOT as well as all the local members, and you can see there's just a number of big projects that went through, so including State Road in Cuyahoga Falls, as well as the Arlington 619 intersection. So I think, you know, one of the things we talked about, Mike, especially, has been AMETS and the other MPOs needing to spend the funds that they receive. And I think this year AMETS really tried to do that. And so it's reflected in here. We got a real good pat on the back from ODOT. They were really pleased with our efforts. And so we're very excited about that. The CMAC program, the MPO funding for CMAC, basically, Victor of our staff has been working hard at work at this. They're working very difficultly to put together a statewide scoring criteria that all the MPOs are comfortable with. Once that happens, they're optimistic that it will still take projects at the local level, but they'll end up being pushed up to the state level, where all MPOs will decide which projects should get funding based on the same funding criteria. So that's moving along. Nothing's been official. Nothing's been decided. They're still currently meeting. With the PCR ratings, we're currently working with Summit County to have a regional PCR system where we collect the pavement data. I think we talked about this either last meeting or two meetings ago. And then also, we are going out for funding this fall, so I think that's a pretty exciting thing for most communities. We're trying to get the word out to communities to let them know that our funding is going to be available, probably to the tune of about, about $18, $19 million available over the two-year period. So, also, in June, we had a bike and brainstorm in Green that was very well attended. We had over 30 people, as well as a couple of Green councilmen riding on some of the streets throughout Green. And also, if you remember when Andy Johns of FHWA was here last meeting, we are officially certified by the feds, and we are operating in good standing. So we passed all of our certification reviews. So we were, as a staff, we're always happy when that happens, obviously. So that's really positive as well. Other than that, nothing else to report, and I'd be happy to answer any of the questions that I might have on those topics.
The pavement condition project, that involves, didn't we talk about some new technology, some sort of way they can measure?
Yeah, we were talking about, depending on who gets hired, you know, the different ways that they actually test the pavement. Some people do small, hey Joel, some people do small drilling into the pavement, others use like an infrared, and there's all different ways to analyze it. So we're hoping that we'll get a good cost savings by doing it regionally and think that that we'll be able to harness some of that new technology that's out there.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions, comments? Okay. We'll move on from the our budget reports and go ahead on to the fourth item, which is the 2010 to 2012 traffic crash technical memorandum, a copy of which is included in your packets under attachment 5A. There's a cover letter plus the report itself, and Curtis is going to provide some additional detail.
So our crash reports are always probably one of the most popular things that we do every year. Popular for a lot of reasons. I think a lot of people just find it interesting, but also it's usually a great way to get funding for local communities, because if you have a problem area, there's a lot of money and safety that can help you fix it. So a couple of interesting trends came out of the crash report this year. You know, obviously the big thing overall in Ohio is distracted driving. That's been a big push by the state, and it's something that we continue to see. There's, you know, the data on how many people are actually driving distracted is really poor, because, you know, the only way the police really know if someone was on their phone is if they fess up, if they actually say, oh, I was texting and wasn't paying attention. So there is a place on the police reports now in Ohio where they can say, you know, were they distracted by, you know, phone or texting or whatever, but in a strange way, unless they witness it, it's based on the honor system of the police report. So the data is still a little shaky. Alcohol-related crashes are still continue to be a big push, too. They, in the last three-year period, they accounted for only 4% of the crashes, but 44% of the fatalities in the region. So just goes to show that alcohol is really still plays a huge role in the death toll on the roads. The most frequent alcohol-induced accident is one that's usually self-created. They lose control of the vehicle, fall off the road, and then run into a tree or run into some fixed object. And that's usually in the best-case scenario. Obviously, it's worse when they pull other vehicles into it and other people get hurt. Also, when we're talking about safety issues, there's also a big swing when you look at youth driving and senior driving are the two big ones. For the youth, overall, they make up 40%, and this is basically from 16 to 25-year-olds, make up over 40% of the crashes in our region. They also make up about 25% of the fatalities are by people in that age group. In the 65 and up growing, you know, which is probably the largest segment of drivers that's growing as the baby boomers age, they are about 14% of all crashes in our area. So it seems like when you look at the data, what you see is kind of like a big smiley face on the curve. So when if you've got, you know, age on the horizontal, it's kind of like a lot of crashes up top at the youngest drivers, and it swoops down, and then a lot of crashes as people get older. And with that, with the aged population, it's not as much that they're bad drivers. It's more issues with response time, reaction time, and usually vision issues can cause some issues. As a total and trend, we're down a little bit in crashes from about 17,000 to about 16,600. Our most popular type of crash is the rear end. About 33% of all of our crashes are rear end collisions. Our injuries are down slightly. Our fatalities went down. They were in 2011. We had 47 fatalities on our roadway system. This year we had 44. Also, we looked at bike trends and pedestrian trends. So bicycle crashes about stayed the same. It's roughly between about 110 as low. This year it was as low as 103. There were 103 bicycle crashes in 2012. Of that, though, while they account for less than 1% of the crashes, they account for, or of all those crashes, 78% of them result in serious injury. And 21% of all bike crashes are involve children under the age of 12. And a lot of those on the police reports, what you see are kids just not really following the rules of the road, not even really knowing there are rules on the road, and you know, kind of very bad luck situations. From the pedestrian side, there were over 481 injuries, or 481 crashes over a three-year period. Of those, 86% of all pedestrian crashes end in injury, and 12% of those crashes involve children under the age of 12. So, the other thing to point out would be that the number one highway location for crashes is right outside our door here, West Market Street, the segment of Martin Luther King Boulevard, State Route 59, from West Market Street to North Broadway. That's, you know, where the freeway turns into a arterial, and you have a lot of rear-end crashes. The second is West Exchange Street between Rhodes and Dart, and that one's been on there in the past as well. And what's happening on that one is kind of interesting. For a one-way road, a lot of people turn left into businesses, not from the far left lane, but from the second left lane. So there's a lot of angled crashes where cars are cutting off cars behind them, turning left into a driveway. So it's sort of an interesting phenomenon. They've tried a number of different low-cost solutions, including different kinds of signage and paint, and it hasn't helped at all. It still continues to be a dangerous intersection, or dangerous segment. On the intersections, Martin Luther King and Howard, one of the busiest intersections, is also the highest crash. So the segment and the intersection are in the same location, essentially. And then can anyone guess where the most crashes take place in Southern Portage County?
You said last time it was Talmadge Circle.
Yep, it's Talmadge Circle. 284 crashes in Talmadge Circle. It only ranks in the top 25, though, because almost all of those crashes have very low severity. You know, they're all very slow speed, fender bender type crashes. So I think overall, you know, crashes, injuries, and fatalities were down from 2011. I think if the economy picks up a little bit more, it'll be interesting to see. You know, our traffic counts have been kind of stabilized, but it'll be interesting to see if those traffic counts increase or if they continue to stay the same. And obviously, the more cars on the road, the better the recipe is for danger. But I'd be happy to try to answer any questions for you. I know the report's pretty big and there's a lot of, you know, separate locations, but I can try to answer any questions, or if not, make sure to get you guys an answer.
I had made a separate inquiry to Curtis about crashes involving the collision of semis or larger trucks, larger commercial vehicles with, you know, regular individually owned cars, pickup, like trucks, pickups, things like that, where there's a disparity in the size of the vehicles involved. I've had a personal feeling for a long time that a lot of the trucks that are especially going east to west through Akron, through the Central Interchange, which is a high volume area, are vehicles that are dodging the tolls on the turnpikes. So I'd like to see consideration given this, well, in data to either justify or disprove that feeling, that idea, that some sort of count be made of the traffic crash reports that involve that type of situation, and whether or not it's a factor in the overall use of the roads, first of all, and injuries. I believe there's been at least one fatal truck crash already involving two semis on the 76-77 leg of the freeway there. But I think that needs to have a spotlight put on it. to see if there's something could be done to reduce that type of hazard to the people in this area, because you know, they're traveling locally, the truck's trying to make time between possibly the East Coast and the West Coast and points in between, Chicago, wherever. But I believe a lot of them are traveling through here to get away from the tolls on the Ohio Turnpike. And I think something should be considered in this area. So, Curtis, what do you think?
We'll get on it.
We have vehicle counts. Do we have truck vehicle counts?
Yes, we do. I think
break them up between cars and and large vehicles. That could be a bus, I suppose. A
yeah, I think they do axles based on the number of axles. I was talking to Mike beforehand too, is that what I'm not sure about is the safety data. If there's a place in the data where where we get it, do they actually check off, you know, this was, would there be an easy way for us to collect that data, you know, this crash included a semi essentially, and it's in, it's, you know, we had 50,000 police reports, so it's in the police reports, but we don't thumb through the police reports. We thumb through the database spreadsheet that, you know, is generated by the police reports. So if they're not checking off the box, it could mean someone going through 50,000, you know, police reports trying to figure out which ones include trucks. So, but I would have to guess that we've got some data available from that. So we're going to look into it.
Okay. The question arises, I've noticed that in the military we've dropped our 50-pound briefcases of flight charts, manuals, approaches, international regulations, and whatsoever, and we're doing all of our stuff on an iPod now. That's a 50-pound you've got to carry it out in the cockpit every time. Are the police now equipped to put all this data in on an iPod where it forces you to go through step-by-step, fill in, like car was the first accident, truck was the second.
Right.
Second
right.
Vehicle involved, another car was a third glancing blow. You know.
Yeah, I think.
And then we force them to go through that, get rid of paper forms out in the vehicles.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the police forces are locally controlled, locally
right.
funded.
It'd be something for the policy committee.
Yeah, so I think there are some communities that use that regularly, and I think there are some that don't have that capability. And then, you know, but I still get the sense that a lot of our police reports are still paper police reports.
I would think that would be a goal for the policy committee to approach that and get everything standardized throughout the area here, the AMATS area, so everybody's on the same page.
And it's interesting because there was a discussion at TAC today was that, you know, Springfield Township actually was improperly filing their... They were improperly putting together their police reports on certain roads, and it didn't get picked up in the system, and it actually threatened the funding availability for a really bad location because they basically weren't recording the data that actually, you know, they weren't getting, in a weird way it says they weren't getting credit for crashes that happened there, but that's essentially what happened. So they had to go back retroactively, re-pull all the police reports, and spend a lot of time doing that. So it's very important that every community does this, and that's one of the things that they were talking about today at our TAC.
Sounds like a job for a summer hire and AMATS to go around.
Anybody besides Mr. Mackey have any questions or comments? Mr. Helms?
I guess over the decades, quite a few road projects have been promoted because of the crash report, basically a higher score.
Mm-hmm.
Have you actually done an evaluation, you know, 5 years after construction has been taking place, where that intersection or stretch of road now places versus where it was 10 years previous?
You know, it's funny. We've never done, like, an official evaluation, you know, like a official report. Like, Dave, who does all of our safety stuff, like, will recognize that, and he'll point things out, like, oh, this intersection really fell after we did this. But we don't keep track of it probably as well as we should, because what happens sometimes is, you know, sometimes they fall off, but then they come back up. And sometimes it could be just because there was a dumb luck, I hate saying it like that, but a dumb luck fatality where, you know, it wasn't really the road design, but it was someone was drunk and someone hit a pole, et cetera. So we haven't done that, but I know that he follows them personally, but I don't think we have anything official. That would be actually kind of a cool thing to to look at. We do that with congestion in our CMP, our congestion management report, so we look back to see how we've reduced congestion, but we haven't done that with safety.
We're basing all that money
right.
On that price. Right. Is it a reality?
Yeah.
We assume it's a reality in a few
right.
places, but
right.
is it consistently a reality?
Yeah.
Mr. Blake, do you have something?
You seeing any trends in motorcycle fatalities?
You know, we didn't touch on them. I know last year when we put together the report, motorcycle fatalities were a larger portion of the of all the fatalities. I don't know if that was... if it was brought up in the document this time. I know sometimes we do, but I can find out more. But I think my guess is if they didn't, it probably stayed the same as what it was.
The Pivotal Review Committee, and that's been a major issue we've seen with
yeah.
motorcycles, especially with motorcycles mixed with alcohol.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know, I remember it coming up last year, but I don't know if we singled it out this year. But I know, especially from the fatality perspective and the severity, a lot of it's motorcycles.
Anybody else have anything on the 2010 to 2012 traffic crash report, technical memorandum? All right. No one has anything, we'll leave that item and move on to other policy committee agenda items. This actually encompasses the attachments to your packets. That would be 6A, 6B, and 6C. These involve changes to the TIP for the fiscal years 2014-2017. Resolution 2013-10 involves Village of Manaway, Route 44 sidewalk project. Resolution 2013-11 comprises numerous projects involving the 2014 to 2017 TIP, four new projects, and numerous revisions. 2013-12 encompasses four projects, one of which I would like to draw your attention to this evening. Contained in Resolution 2013-12 is item, it's listed third. It's called the I-76 Akron Beltway Study. It is a new study in Akron and Coventry Township to analyze the freeway interchanges to optimize traffic flow. Engineering is scheduled in fiscal year 2014 using $14,400,000 in interstate maintenance funds and $1,600,000 in state funds. I called Curtis on this because in my own mind I have to question what outcomes are we envisioning that will take $16 million in study. And what I mean by that is my experience in the past in different cities, and I'm sure you've got similar experience. For instance, in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, they've had ramp lights, ramp control lights, for years to control the traffic entering the freeway system. We've already got the billboards that are being put up. We've had separate studies on the central interchange. We've had, I believe, scrutiny on the Howe Road area. We've also various lanes of freeways widened out to three lanes. Speed limits have risen on the west side going out toward 21 and 77 heading to Cleveland. That was raised to 65 miles an hour. So I guess I have to question the work that's involved in this $16 million and what somebody must have a vision of the possible outcome for this money spent. So I would just ask before we have any vote or findings on this that we get some more detail if such is available. And I was hoping Curtis might be able to provide that tonight.
Yeah. So this is attachment 6C that we're talking about. This is the attachment 6B and 6A are both AMATS resolutions from the standpoint that they're AMATS projects, which are pretty, you know, standard, usual. The third one is an ODOT resolution, which is they let us know that, you know, they've got this federal funding and this is how they want to use it. So that it makes it a little bit different. So when Mike called, we didn't actually know all the specifics on the project because it's not really our project, but it has to end up on our TIP. So the idea behind the I-76 Akron Beltway study is that this is a culmination of what used to be the Central Interchange study and the Central Interchange project. The thought was that instead of looking at the I-76 corridor and studying it from including, you know, the west leg, Kenmore leg, central, and out to 21, the ODOT's thinking now is that it makes more sense to look at the corridor as sort of like, if you can imagine, the box of 76, 77, 277, and 76, 77. So like that kind of square. And the thought being is, can they successfully move traffic or route traffic different ways to reduce the congestion throughout the corridor and then allow for more, still major improvements, but not the same scale? For a long time, we've been talking about a $320 million central interchange project. And I think what they want to study is, can we do this for less if we also consider traffic movement and traffic flow? So that being said, the first thing they want to do is study it. Now, what we still don't have a firm grip on completely, although the answer we got back from ODOT is that most of the funding, as Mike said, like the $16 million total, most of that funding is actually meant for engineering, for the actual payment of the design of whatever work's going to be done, but they don't know yet what the work is going to be done. It's almost like they're putting aside about $14 million to anticipate the engineering and design that they will need when these projects go forward. We don't have a specific cost yet on the actual study, but our staff guesses that it's like a $1 million study, and about 14 point something is actually for the actual engineering of these large scale projects. We do know for sure there's going to have to be a lot of bridge rehab and a lot of ramp work no matter what. What we don't understand in talking to Jason about this afternoon was that why there's $15 million of engineering for something that we don't know. How do we know that it's going to be $15 million, and, you know, what is it? It's basically, the way it was explained to us is it's almost like a set-aside. Does that make sense? So we're trying to and are hoping to have a more complete answer from ORAP by the policy committee meeting, but our plan is, and we brought up, Mike, your concerns at TAC, and there were some questions, and I think the county engineer raised as well, how much is the study? You know, if it's not the $16 million, how much is it? And we didn't get a clear answer from ODOT, and so we're also, I think, going to raise that issue at policy committee and just make sure that it's vetted in a public manner instead of just kind of having ODOT, you know, slip through $16 million for something. So it's kind of a half answer, and we don't have the whole picture. But in ODOT's view, I know that a lot of that is for the actual design work of whatever projects are going to come out of the study, and for some reason they lumped all the money together. That's about as well as I think I can explain it, not being completely familiar.
Well, I guess, you know, what I'm trying to determine in my own mind, I mean, what do they think they're going to do?
Yeah.
You know, I think we've got all the lanes we're going to have without taking a lot of private property.
Right.
And, you know, if you're talking about new ramps or lanes, I mean, does it really contain, are we going to discover something that we haven't discovered already?
No.
For $16 million? I don't know. Yeah, I just, it kind of jumped out at me as a questionable use of the public's money, given what little description there was. And I brought it up to you, and I'm bringing it up now because it's unfortunate we don't have more people here. It'd be nice to see what they think, but it's. I thought it had the potential for one of these occasions where I go down and take our 3 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever we get and say, look, you know, us John Q. Publics out there are looking at this and we're saying, what? What is this? You know, what are we going to get for this? So, I mean, if there's a groundswell in that way, I'll be glad to do that next week. Otherwise, if we feel that Curtis has got a good handle on our concern in that way, we'll let it be brought up in the normal policy committee deliberations. I guess I'm open to, as your chairperson, I guess I'm open to the feelings of those in attendance tonight. Yes, sir, Mr. Blake.
District 3 has done a lot of work. Code up District 3 through Wadsworth, west towards 57 and Route 3. We've done a lot of upgrades, working on it right now. We just take care of the box from 76, the Kenmore leg, over the central. We're missing that section from the Kenmore leg to the county line. So, like, we've got a gap now. If ODOT doesn't look into that particular section, then they're leaving quite a gap that they're going to leave untreated. And they should be dealing with the entire thing. Go from 21 or the Summit County line. Take it all the way through to the central.
Well, I guess the question that I'm saying is, you know, you're looking at $16 million. What new revelations or new technologies or new alternatives are going to arise or do we hope to get from that $16 million?
Is congestion what they're looking at or the safety?
I don't know, but I know that
trucks roll over constantly.
There was a meeting at Colgan High School several years ago about the central interchange. And there were billboards or you know, storyboards presented about options, alternatives, property acquisitions, just, you know, detail. Very, very good detail. I mean, it's very clearly presented, very well attended. And I say, you know, there's in other cities, they've got ramp lights and these other technologies. So when somebody has put together this figure, what are they hoping to draw from them? And I'm just hoping that, you know, a bit of scrutiny is put on this so that we feel like, okay, it's a good use of $16 million.
And I think from your point about the Route 21 is that ODOT does already have on the books with interstate maintenance funds, they are going to widen 76 from about before the Kenmore leg in the turn, but basically from that point out to 21 to three lanes on each side. So they are going to fill that portion, but that's not really, it's somewhat congested, but the real problem there is the actual ramping and getting on 76, 77. You know, like that's more the issue. And Mike, I think you're asking a valid question because I think part of it is, you know, do we expect, are we throwing, you know, good money after bad? Like, do we expect for $1 million, are we really going to get a $50 million cheaper project than what we've currently got estimated? Because I think what ODOT would probably tell you is like, well, right now the project as designed is going to cost us $320 million. And if we can spend $1 million now and $16 million on engineering and save $100 million on the project cost, then in their mind it would be worth it. But I think what we'd like to know, and I think it's a good question, is what is another study going to get you? You know, what is the new thing that's out there that we think is going to save that $100 million? Is it, you know, is it different lane configurations? Is it less property acquisition? All those types of things. And I think that's where we just don't have that level of detail yet from ODOT, and we hope to by policy.
I say it's just worth 1,000 words. I think by the time you have a policy committee, you might, I'm assuming they have a screen down there, you could pop up a map of the box. Here comes 77,
here comes 76, here comes Route 8.
Yeah.
Here's the mess through the central part of Akron. Here's 271 or Kenmore Bypass. Here's the mess where you have 77 going north, but then diving into 21. I've always hated that intersection. Whether I'm coming south or north on 21 or 77, it's just poorly designed.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see there's room for improvement, but I don't want to buy a pig in a poke.
Right.
And I think on that, somebody from ODOT could fax out, well, here's where we're going to study, and here seems to be the areas where you have crashes or congestions or poor air quality, put them all together, and these are the areas we need to look at. That might be a better idea before you make a decision on this. Mm-hmm. Right now, as our chair says, I have a very uneasy feeling about this much money going into something unless they can show me the finished product, saying this is what you're going to get for your money. Mm-hmm.
Are any schematics to do this? Any rules that they think they might be doing out there?
Not that we've seen yet. I mean, they've got to have some idea with the engineering. You know, usually engineering's a certain percentage of the whole project cost estimate, and I would assume they've got some number in their head, but, we're not privy to those details yet. I mean, I think, talking to Jason about it, I know he seemed, I know he wants to get to the bottom of this and have a clear answer. So I think it will definitely get it flushed out, but I think, Mike, if you feel like you want to really push the citizen's perspective on something like that,
I kind of take my cues from the people who come to the meetings, and, like we've had in the past, sometimes there's a groundswell feeling about a particular item, and I think part of the job of the chair would be to reflect that in the policy committee if you feel strongly about it. It's something that I feel is just it's part of the duties of the position, and I feel if we don't, I guess if we feel we sit here and we say we pound the table or whatever and speak up, but we never show up at the policy committee, I think that's kind of a message too. I just feel that there are times to step up, and if you feel the same way, I'm willing to go down there and step up and say this is the way our people are feeling about this, and if there's some new information, hey, terrific. If it's a good way to spend $16 million of the public's funds, fine. If there's some new breakthrough that somebody's got out there, terrific. Or some savings, like Curtis is saying, if we can spend $16 and save $100, that's why we're here, but we don't see it yet. So
I think his idea is to have a visual presentation, you get a better grasp of things.
Well, you go down there, you get 3 minutes or whatever it is, and you just say, hey, we're looking at this, and we feel that barring any new breakthroughs, here's what we feel. For instance, if I were to make a motion now, I would make a motion that knowing what I know, or what we know jointly, is that the Akron Beltway study basically be tabled from Resolution 2013-12 until there is further detail presented. Now, if there can be a presentation to the satisfaction of the policy committee by next Wednesday, fine. But, I mean, if I were to make a motion right now, that's what it would be. Table this until we know how the $16 million is going to be utilized. So,
are you asking the floor to make a motion?
Well, I'm just saying that's personally how I would feel to approach it. I guess it's a way to get a reaction from the policy committee, one way or another. By doing so, they would have to at least discuss it. Mr. Helms?
My concept of what took place a couple of years ago at the interchange study was that no one really came up with a unique, good, conceptual solution. And I guess you have to have an engineer come up with a concept that's going to work before you have just even a basic concept, it doesn't take thousands even of dollars to come up with a concept, and just with all the computer simulations right now, before you end up spending all this money. Well, 20 years ago, yes, to do anything, you had to put out so much engineering. You had to actually engineer a whole project before you knew if it was going to work. Now, conceptual, with model it and everything else, I really challenge their need for this money for what they're saying it's for.
Well, the presentations at Hoban High School, as I recall, had options on this project. They had.
But did they find any of them feasible?
Well, it sounded like it was feasible. It was the money.
Correct.
It was the money.
For what they were getting.
I mean, physically, there were things that could be done.
But there was no justification for what you were getting for the cost it was going to cost. And that's what
it gave rise to, I think, the elimination of the ramps, Wolf Ledges, Grant Street, things.
Yeah.
I mean, that was part of that.
And that, yeah. There's still, that's now a separate project that is moving forward.
So, but as I say, I mean, it depends on how you all feel about this particular item. I mean, we can let these go forward to the policy committee as they are, and I can go down there and voice the concern that we have, and hopefully MATS will, you know, convey to ODOT that there's a concern about spending the money, and we'll get a better answer for our question.
Another question I'd like to ask, does ODOT have to do what AMAT says? Is this more of a guidance document?
Well, they cannot use federal funds unless it's on our TIP. So they do it. If we kept it off the TIP, they could not use the federal. They could use the, what is it? I think they're using $1.6 million of state funds. That doesn't have to go on our TIP. But the engineering of $14.4 million of interstate maintenance, which is federal, that would have to show up on our TIP. So we could potentially, I mean, if the policy committee so felt, they could not approve this resolution, and ODOT would not be able to, you know, that's meant to protect regions from where a state might say, we want to put up, you know, a giant highway through your backyard. It gives the regions an ability to say, hell no, you know, essentially, and keep it from happening. So we do have that opportunity, you know, but my guess is that would be highly, you know, I would see that being highly unlikely. I mean, I think, you know, what you brought up about the costs of the project, I think there are designs and concepts and all that stuff, but I think what ODOT's saying now is there's no way we're ever going to get, you know, $300 million for the central and $200 million for the rest of it, so we need to go to a new plan. So I think that's where they're coming.
Nibble at it?
Huh?
Will they nibble at it?
I think that was
so much a year. And
yeah, like breaking it up, similar to like what they've done with Main Broadway, breaking it up into those kinds of chunks so that it's not, or so that it is more feasible.
What do you recommend we do, Curtis? Because I don't feel that we want to just rubber stamp this and send it to the policy committee and say, you know, basically we recommend passage the way it is right now, because we don't, I don't think. So what do you think we should do?
I think there's two things you can do. One, I mean, you could definitely table that resolution. You know, you could just say, we're not comfortable with it as is, and send that, and the staff can present that for you. Or you could table the resolution as is, and, you know, you could come and present and explain that, you know, or you guys could just pass it. I mean, those are the three options, and I think that's where, you know, I think the first two options, either one, I think will get the message across, but it is sometimes nice to have a member of the Citizens Committee remind the policy committee that you guys exist and are paying attention. So I think from that perspective, I don't think it hurts.
All right, well, let's say this.
Can I ask one other question?
Well, let me just say this first. With what Curtis has to say about the three options, if you wish to table resolution 2013-12, I will go to the policy committee and explain why we're doing that. So I guess we would look at 2013-12 as an item that we'd like the policy committee to take a closer look at, and we need more information. Now, you can pass it. If you want to pass this the way it is, you can do that as well. But if you wish to table it, I feel part of that would be the option where I go to the policy committee and explain why we're doing that.
I've got a side question.
Okay, Mr. Helms.
Of this $14 million, is this federal money that's going to be spent in this area no matter what? So it's a question of at least half the communities would say, well, no, we think we have a better project to spend this money on than our central energy.
Boy, that's a good...
Is that going to be something that the policy...
My guess is with state, federal dollars, they can use that wherever they want to use it. So like, it could potentially... If for some reason the policy committee said, no, you're not spending it here, most likely it would go somewhere else outside
of
our
region. So we lose the general money. So it's not a question of which projects are more important.
Right, right. They'd probably just go to a different region or put the money towards a different project. But, you know, in a way... I mean, Ohio's always holding that $16 million. You know, it's not like they would lose the money. They would just reallocate it somewhere else. And most likely, it would not be in our region, just playing the odds. But it could be, you know.
So that's not a consideration.
Yeah, I don't think it would be a strong consideration.
Okay.
They couldn't move it up to...
put on the
outlying corridor, 271 widening project. Get that going. Yeah. That's another big barrier.
Well, and they could use it on our side. You know, they're having a public meeting in Macedonia.
Yeah, that's right. That goes all the way down there. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we only have the three resolutions, and I think even though we have in past practice recently has been to bundle them, I think maybe the best way to do it for this particular situation would be to leave them unbundled, and we would take each resolution on its own and put those on the record.
Would you like me to give a brief explanation of the other two? Or you think you guys are...
Why would this take them one at a time?
Okay, we can do that. Curtis will briefly explain. We talked about 2013-12 in some degree, but we have 2013-10 and 11, and why don't we have Curtis just fill in whatever additional
information we need. I'll be brief, but 2013-10, basically the village of Manaway is trying to do some sidewalks. They're trying to time it up with an ODOT bridge project. After some drainage issues and other things, they realized that they didn't have enough money. They came to TAC TIP. Timing was of the essence and asked for another $55,000. This is actually Manaway's first project since 1962 with AMAT's funds, so I think the committee felt very strongly that they were due anyway. So the TAC TIP is recommending an extra $55,000 for their sidewalk project in the village. In resolution 2013-11, as you recall, in May we passed the TIP. One of the things the TIP has to do is be in fiscal constraint, which meant that we couldn't put we have more projects than what we currently show that we have, sort of how this year we spent 177% of our allocation. Well, we want to keep doing that because we want to keep taking other people's money, essentially. So we are basically we're pushing back a lot of projects that we've allocated funds for, but putting them back in the official TIP through fiscal constraints. So that one's probably the most, that's why there's so many projects. Most of them are being rescheduled and moved around so that everything makes sense in the new TIP.
Okay. All right, thanks, Curtis. Mm-hmm. All right, regarding resolution 2013-10,
I make a motion to approve 2013-10.
Okay, we have a motion from Mr. Mackey.
Second.
Second from Ms. Kessler to approve resolution 2013-10 as submitted. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those... Oops, Mr. Helms.
We not approve it, to accept it. We can't approve it. That's only policy.
Pass it.
Well, we recommend approval to the policy.
Recommend, okay, recommend.
Yeah, thank you. The recommendation comes to us from the AMAT staff, and so we're recommending on to the policy committee. Anyway, we do have a motion and a second in that regard. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of resolution 2013-10 is submitted. Please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Similarly, we've got resolution 2013-11, attachment 6B in the package. And we have the recommendation of the AMAT staff for approval of this resolution. Do we have any motions on this resolution?
I recommend that we approve.
We have a motion from Ms. Kessler.
Second.
Second from Mr. Coletta. To accept resolution 2013-11 is submitted. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of resolution 2013-11 is submitted, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Finally, we have resolution 2013-12. This is a resolution containing four items, including the previously discussed I-76 Akron Beltway study. And do we have any motions on this resolution?
Mr. Chair, I recommend we table 2013-12 pending more information.
All right. Okay, we have a motion from Mr. Mackey, second from Ms. Kessler.
Do we wish to table all four items or just the one?
We would table a resolution.
Yeah, I think you have to table a resolution.
We can't break it apart. We can't break it apart.
We're recommending it be tabled. Now, I can, and by way of explanation, I will go there next Wednesday and indicate that our particular area of concern is the Beltway study. The policy committee could probably do what they will as far as the disposition of the individual component items. But what we're saying is if we have to make a thumbs up or thumbs down finding on this, we're saying table it pending further information on some content, which is what I'll explain at the policy committee meeting. Split.
Does it have to be a thumbs up or thumbs down? Can there be not enough information to make a decision?
Well, that's what we're telling. That's what we're saying. That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
We're not telling them they have to take a thumbs up or a thumbs down. We're just saying, here's our finding, here's why we did what we did, and here's the area of concern that we have.
What year are we in right now? Have we started 2014 or we just started?
Yes.
It starts on July 1st.
Yeah, it started July 1st, so we're in 2014.
So how does that, since this is the first meeting in this, and this is to revise it, how does the timetable affect anything? Does that mean anything at all? Does it revise anything?
It could potentially, it all depends on the project, and I don't, if they were trying to spend this and encumber it within the next month. Our next meeting is not until September, so it could impact, the time that a project could be encumbered and work could get started on it. But this project, I would assume it would delay it. I don't know what their timetable is, but I would assume it could potentially delay the project.
You don't know nothing about it, do
you? No, we really don't. And that was, we did put in a call to ODOT yesterday. I got a voicemail response. We played phone tag, we called again today, another staff called today, and we just haven't been able to nail them down yet. So,
well, how about the other three issues on there? Are those time critical?
My guess is that they probably are. I would say everything, anytime we delay a project, we could be potentially pushing it out 3 months. I think that's a reality, into a different quarter. for some projects, that's not a big deal. For other projects, it is. I mean, I think you could also accept the motion with the caveat of, you know, some sort of caveat regarding the Innerbelt study, or you could just vote against the thing. And, you know, I think that's more the thumbs up, thumbs down.
I just heard those other three projects.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what we're saying is that as ordinary citizens, knowing what we know, we don't feel we know enough, and by next week there may be additional information that comes forward. The policy committee then has the power to take this thing apart as they see fit. You know,
yeah, that's a good point. By tabling it, what you're doing is you're telling the policy committee that you were not comfortable approving the resolution. But ultimately, the only thing that will delay these projects is if the policy committee agrees and votes down the resolution. So in a way, what you're kind of doing is kind of sending up in a traffic signal, you're sending up the yellow light, and policy committee's got to decide if they want to run through it or if they want to stop. But what the tabling does is let policy committee know that you guys had heartburn with the resolution. And then, like Mike said, if they come back and they say, well, really, the only thing we're concerned about is the Beltway study, they could pick apart the resolution and make a decision on how they want to approve it.
So we aren't stopping any of the projects?
No, you're giving a public recommendation of this committee. And so there's, you know, now if we don't get any new information, Mike goes there and sways the policy committee, then I guess essentially you would have. You would have stopped it. The blood will be on your hands.
The policy committee in the office.
Which means that we later on the table, we're not going to do anything until we get more information. It's put on the table.
Okay. Now,
just so we don't have an error in the record, the motion was made by... Mackey was made the motion.
Yeah. I made a motion to table 23-12.
Okay. We have a second. Okay. Do we have any further discussion on the motion?
I would like to amend it to just table the one issue out of the six. Because there's not three other, there's actually
four. Point of order.
When do you amend
it? Robert's rules of order. Sorry. If you have to just take the right that's meant to be.
Oh, now that motion has been made and seconded.
You could pass it, fail it.
We
can't amend it or
retable
it.
You could withdraw your motion, though.
Yeah, I could.
Could you conditionally approve it under the condition that Beltway study be stricken from the approval?
You could. I mean, but again, we're in Robert's rule. I mean, you could, yeah. Because I think no matter what happens, I think policy committee, at this point, policy committee is going to have a pretty damn good idea of where the questions are and what the concerns are. You know, so I think whether we call it conditional or table or downright, you know, no vote, I think no matter what, if Mike comes in and describes the situation, they're going to be aware of it and they'll make an informed decision, so...
Hopefully, they read the minutes of this meeting.
They won't get to do that until September, Bill.
I want to make sure we send a message that the other pieces are not being stricken. Unless she knows that we're just saying, oh, wait, it's the one that's.
Do that under other business.
You might have two negative votes based on proposed amendment versus having a unanimous vote.
If you feel you can sway the committee explaining which one we are opposed to, it is the Beltway project.
Well, you know, in terms of swaying them one way or another, I guess all I'm trying to do is convey to them that as ordinary citizens, we don't have enough information to feel that this is a good use of $16 million of the public's money.
That's not in our motion. what's in the motion is just to turn the whole thing up.
No, totally
table. It needs to be picked up again later.
We're not encouraging the policy committee to throw this thing out by any stretch. All we're saying is we're asking them to put some scrutiny on one item in this resolution. If they do so to their satisfaction, then they can do what they want regardless of our finding, our vote.
If you change your motion, just include that statement.
No, I can't. It has to be a table pass or no pass.
Yeah.
So we're voting on tabling it and letting the policy committee hang themselves or pass it themselves, whatever they want to do with themselves. They're the ones with the money vote.
They have the latitude to do what they see fit to do.
We recommend.
All we're going to do is have input in the process. You know, I'm not going to go in there and encourage them to throw all these items out. All I'm going to tell them is exactly what we discussed here tonight, which is the objective and the content of this study. Given all the other information that's been gathered over the years on the same subject. So that's really all there is to it.
If you want to just put it to a vote, see what happens.
Let's put it. We have a motion. We have a second.
Call a question.
And we're going to call a question. We can go ahead and take our vote and see what happens. So if we have no further discussion on this motion, we have a motion to table resolution 2013-12. All those in favor of doing so, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed to tabling resolution 2003-12? Okay.
How about you make the point?
Well, hearing none, the motion will carry. I'll be there next Wednesday. You're all invited, of course.
September will be our last meeting at the Martin Center. They're closing the Martin Center for Policy Committee. Well, for everything, but including our Policy Committee. Starting in December, we'll be at the Quaker Station, the building behind Quaker Square. They might be tearing down the Martin Center. I guess it's 96 years old, and the university's scared about having a building on the National Register, so they're trying to decide if they should tear it down or if they should renovate it. And we've heard they're either going to potentially, it might be cheaper for them to tear it down and rebuild the conference center, or they might tear it down and build a parking deck.
What building are you talking about?
The Martin Center building, it's on...
I worked there.
Yeah.
Back when I was in university.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, thank you. Thank you for your vote. And we'll definitely attend. By the way, the policy committee is scheduled to meet next Wednesday, July 24th at 1:30 p.m. at the Martin Center, the South Room. So you're, of course, all welcome to join in the deliberations there.
Is there free parking?
Yes, sir.
Free parking, sure.
Yep.
Okay. As far as our next meeting, my agenda says location to be announced.
Yes, and it will be here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Heather, is it reserved yet, or are we just...
I would have to double check.
Okay.
They only let me reserve it too far in advance, so I will get in touch tomorrow and reserve it.
Okay.
I'll double check and make sure.
Yeah. And if for some reason anything changes, we'll send an email and we'll make sure, beforehand.
Okay. All right. If that concludes our formal agenda, we also... Now I'm usually open the floor to other business and go around the table to see if anybody has anything for the good of the order. Ms. Kessler? Nothing further. Mr. Blake?
We talked about the Springfield project with the crash problems. Mm-hmm. That was one that had safety funds tied to it.
Mm-hmm.
So there certainly could lose the money.
Right,
because there's no apparent safety issue with the crash being dropped. So crash data is critical, and I use that quite a bit in the engineer's office for all of our rankings and the SNLs for safety calls. Yeah. It's critical that the local agencies get that information to us and keep it updated. So.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Helms?
Nothing.
Mr. Clatter?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Anything before we adjourn?
No, I don't.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you for coming tonight, Mr. Mackey.
Well, thinking inside the box, but outside the lines. If you wind up 77 far enough to whatever tie into 21, so you go southbound from there, you could actually move east into Coventry and take over that Sam's Club area. Before they put a building on it and raise the value of it, before we got to buy it.
Thank you.
All right. Again, our next meeting will be Thursday, September 19th, right here, 7 p.m. Thank you all for coming tonight. Enjoy the rest of your summer, and of course, be safe.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much.